The O.J. Simpson story. Does that interest you? A celebrity murder mystery that dominated American conversations during the mid-90s? Does that interest you? Well, it didn't interest filmmaker Ezra Edelman, the director of the documentary O.J. Made in America, an epic 8-hour film broadcast last year on ESPN. What did interest him?
Race is interesting to me. O.J.'s sort of identity is interesting to me along those lines. I'm interested in exploring sort of him through the lens of race and fame and identity, and really looking at this in a much, basically, like, how did we get to that place?
Ezra Edelman took time recently to look back on his year and more with the O.J. story in a conversation with Rebecca Carroll, special projects editor for WNYC. Edelman's journey through the tawdry O.J. surface to find a deeper American meaning is part of our ongoing series exploring race in America. This excerpt in two parts now of Ezra Edelman's conversation with Rebecca Carroll. And a warning, Ezra pulled no punches. His language may be a little candid for traditional public radio.
I was approached about making a movie about O.J., and I said, I don't want to do that. Because of, you know, we'd all talked this out.
Right.
There's nothing more to say. What am I mean, like, I have confidence in my, you know, abilities as a filmmaker, but I don't think I can make stuff up that no, it's like, I didn't know that there was anywhere to go with this. And I was just aggressively not interested in the, like, did he do it? Like, I just, like, not my thing. I'm interested in exploring sort of him through the lens of race and fame and identity, and really looking at this in a much, basically, like, how did we get to that place?
Yeah.
I'd like to explain this. That's why I was...
Right. I mean, I think what's killer, no pun intended, sorry.
Oh, I think pun intended.
Yeah. Is that, you know, he became a symbol of racial justice for black folks in L.A., and the paradox is that he tried so desperately hard to not be black. That's pretty deep.
I mean, look, if you even go back to sort of where I started with this in terms of OJ at USC, and there's this group of politically minded black athletes, and Harry Edwards wants OJ to be a part of this movement. And OJ is a 20-year-old football star, like, trying to live his life and wants to be famous or wants to be in, you know, movies and commercials. This guy's saying, you got to do this.
When I asked him, I said, we're trying to get black athletes to understand they have a role in the current civil rights movement. His response was, I'm not black. I'm OJ.
What they think is right, I guess they must follow their beliefs. Well, right now I don't want to be involved in it because I'm not in track. You know, I'm running track, but when it comes to Olympic time, I'll be in football, so I have no comment on the matter.
OJ was saying, I want to be judged not by the color of my skin. I want to be judged by the content of my character and, most of all, the caliber of my competence. I think I'm the greatest football player that this country has ever seen. That's all I want to be judged by. Don't tell me I've got to do this because I'm black.
And I have empathy when he says, I'm not black, I'm OJ. Like, on its face, like, that's f***ed up. You know, but at the same time, the spirit of it, I understand, in terms of OJ wanting to pursue his hopes and dreams and not be held down by his blackness.
It's so interesting. I think there was something else at play.
Look, I don't speak to be able to know what's going on.
Oh, no, of course. I just...
But no, I mean, look, there's a lot of play. And this is what I would say at the same time. And it's amazing that we're in a moment where this, like, what Colin Kaepernick has done in this in 2016 has happened the same year. We're having this discussion again about black athletes and how depoliticized they've been and where OJ really was the pioneer in that way. And that...
Wait, pioneer in what way?
Being depoliticized as a black...
Depoliticized.
Like, yes. He broke the mold. OJ said, I want to be this. I want to be the guy who can be on TV and be famous, and I'm going to do the contract that I'm, you know, metaphorically signing is that I'm not going to be political. I'm not going to be outspoken about these things, regardless of how I see it or not. That was something that was followed by the Michael Jordans, the Tiger Woods of the world. He created
right.
this paradigm.
Okay.
That's what I mean. He chose self over...
He chose fame.
But that's self. You look at that moment, I also look at OJ's story, truly, is like this decline in our culture. Like, his superficiality and what he espoused, to me, has been reflected in the way our country has gone.
Continuing now with Ezra Edelman, who recently sat down with Rebecca Carroll, special projects editor for WNYC. Edelman is the director of the critically acclaimed ESPN documentary O.J. Made in America.
You know, I set out to make a film that I knew was going to be about race in America, and I want it to be. That's why I wanted to do it. But the twin major theme next to race is celebrity. And, you know, the idea of how someone like OJ becomes who he is, and, you know, our own culpability in building this guy up, the image building, the sort of love we have for our athletes and the pass that we give, you know, them and in turn celebrities, that sense of invincibility, that sense of being able to get away with anything, and the fact that it's sort of, and it comes out so clearly in, you know, at the end of the film, after he's been on trial for murder, you know, he was on TV every day for 9 months. Most people in America, or most white people in America, thought he was guilty. And regardless, by the way, there's enough stuff that came out about him that he's still kind of guilty. And then you see all these people coming up to him, wanting to shake his hand, wanting his autograph, and you're going like, well, why? Oh, because he's famous?
Because he's a celebrity.
They just want to be around. And that says everything you need to know about this place that we live in.
Right.
And so, anyway.
Just, I want to also say before we go into that, the Golden Globes nominations were announced, and there's a fairly nice representation. There are some issues and some gaps, but of black artists and directors and producers. And do you feel like there's progress going on? Did you respond or engage with Oscars So White and all that kind of stuff?
Do I respond to it? Did I engage with it? Of course. I'm always engaged with an issue, the notion of, you know, diversity in Hollywood and anywhere else. I've just frankly been frustrated when you try to sort of have an argument that is the roots of which are real, but you might misappropriate in individual instances, like going to bat for something that may objectively might not be deserving.
What does that mean?
It means that sometimes you have to find examples to fit the argument. So basically what I'm saying is this year that ain't happening. There are so many worthy, justified right. movies that are being honored, and they should, like Moonlight should win every award
I think it
across
will.
The board. So that's all I mean. So for yeah. me, it's like, is this a response to Oscars So White, or right. is this just a proper rewarding of quality work? Yes.
Do you think that we're in a really super different place with race?
Super different. I mean, I think we've evolved slightly. I clearly think that this election shows us that we aren't in that different of a place. I think I was lulled into believing that there were so many things that Donald Trump said that was like, this can't happen. This is like, it's not possible.
So when you say lulled into believing, lulled by what and who?
Well, lulled in maybe to my daily life and my worldview and what my life's like and who I spend time around and where we've evolved to. Not because Obama's in the White House, but there's a general sort of feeling of, you know, we are, I mean, literally becoming a browner country. We are sort of evolving to a place where, you know, how I at least absorb our world culturally and in other ways, that it's like, oh, yes, I feel like we've gotten to a different place. And then something like this, it's like, oh, no, we've, like, who am, like, it was hurtful. It was like, I can't believe I got, you know, fooled. And, like, there's a little bit of that with me.
So can we agree what is racist?
I don't know. Can we? We can.
Tell me. I would be curious to know what your definition of it is.
What my definition of racism is?
Yeah.
Well, this is not something I've thought about in such specific terms, mm-hmm. maybe because I've just been so accustomed to knowing what I see or feel. I think racism is... Jeez, Rebecca. I mean, in very simple terms, painting any group of people from a place actually of superiority with a broad negative brush in an impersonalized negative way. I think that there is and I'm trying to articulate this, and it's amazing to be sitting here having a public conversation, realizing you're like, oh, have I not thought about how I think of racism? Because I don't think about this in this terms.
But I do think that in terms of reconciling, you know, because there's this whole idea of, you know, looking at the South African model of, you know, truth mm-hmm. and reconciliation. We can't reconcile anything until we actually stop doing it. And we're still very much doing racism. And so I feel like the sooner we can kind of identify what it is in concrete terms without allowing folks to move the definition in the goalpost, then we can start reconciling.
Well, from the standpoint of talking about white hegemony and sort of the idea of the power structure of our country and the way that sort of, again, it's hard because then you're talking about, you know, white people as a whole, and that you have to be coming from a position of power to have, you know, sort of offer these viewpoints that keep people down, that sort of have a need to sort of, you know, exert your superiority over others, you know, and that's sort of classically the way I think about racism. And I do think that, and this is gets back to how I was feeling about this election, which is like when I say like, oh, I was lulled.
Right.
In terms of like feeling that maybe within my own circle, you know, in the way I am empowered and the way I live my life, that it's not as if I believe that like I live in a utopia as far as America goes, but that the tide had shifted somewhat. But then when you're sort of put back into this reality of that same hegemony that exists and sort of the need of so many people to keep it in this place, was sort of depressing for me to realize that I had sort of, it felt like, oh, I took my eye off the ball a little bit. And like, I forgot where I was. I forgot where I lived. And that's a very sort of both depressing thing to realize, but also for me, a depressing individual reality to think that I had, because I'm so wrapped up in, you know, my own world, that I sort of believed that. It's the, it's almost like the stark, it's the opposite of feeling of like watching Obama give a speech the night he won the election and still believing he's going to get shot.
Right.
And you're like, what's like, wait, how did I get from there to there 8 years later?
My brilliant, kind of amazing guest is Ezra Edelman. Thank you for being here.
That's Ezra Edelman, director of the documentary OJ Made in America, in conversation with Rebecca Carroll, special projects editor for WNYC.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.